Hello, and welcome to the commentary for Lesson 297, Proverbs 18. So, a couple of things. I noticed some patterns in here. Not really patterns, but I guess main ideas. And Solomon seems to be, I wonder if this particular Proverbs, all these scriptures seem like they were lessons he learned as a judge, possibly. Because one of the things that really stood out to me was verse 16. It says, giving a gift can open doors. It gives access to important people. And at first, when I read that, I thought, that doesn't seem like it should be a proverb. I didn't get it, or it was news to me. And so some of these things, when you're reading through the Proverbs, I think, yep, don't be lazy. Yep, watch your words. Yep, don't talk too much. I get it. Okay, fools, spout off knowledge. Like, I get all that stuff. That's common. We see that over and over again as main themes in Proverbs, but this one was different. Giving a gift can open doors. It gives access to important people. That seemed sort of conniving, like a conniving comment. So I thought that stands out to me. That's different. And I was thinking maybe from the point of view of the gift giver, you know, maybe it's because everyone else wants something from these important people, and if someone comes in without wanting something and actually wants to do something nice for them, maybe that leaves an impression on the important person. But still, I just wasn't sure about that. So I went to Easy English Commentary, and it said, it compared this scripture to bribes. And it says, bribes or secret gifts are evil. They tempt people to do wrong things. Judges must be aware of the dangers of bribes. So from reading that from Easy English, I got, okay, maybe the point of view of that scripture is not of the gift giver, but of the judge. And maybe a warning to the judge that, hey, watch out for people who try to give you bribes. So that's why once I read that and I looked around at all the other scriptures in this Proverbs, it made sense in the context of all of them that maybe he wrote this proverb at that point in his life where he had learned valuable lessons as a judge and things that he would give as if he was giving advice to judges who were in training, right? I went back to the King James Version too, because I thought, okay, is this talking about a gift or is it talking about a bribe? The King James Version said, a man's gift maketh room for him and bringeth him before great men. So that takes me back to my original thought that the King James Version, was written earlier than these translations, and this is from the point of view of the gift giver, right? So I'm not going to say with all certainty either way, but it was just interesting to me. It stood out to me, and I think that's a good example of how we should study the word, that we can't just take things for what they seem on the surface. You got to take it in context. And sometimes, just to get clarification, go back to earlier translations and see what the earlier terminology was, because our ideas of what words mean, of course, change things. And if I really wanted to get down to it, I would look it up. I would find out the Hebrew translation, right? But I haven't learned how to do that yet. I do want to. I think I found a website through my class that you can go in and type in a scripture and get it in Hebrew translation, which is really cool. So I'm going to look for that so that I can pull those out easily as I'm studying, because that would be a perfect opportunity to do that. And maybe I will going back. So, but that was a good one. And I also found another theme, two scriptures that I kind of tied together. That was verse 2 and verse 15. Are similar. It says, fools have no interest in understanding. They only want to air their own opinions. And, you know, we know that it's useless to argue with fools, and there's many scriptures about it. In fact, I went to Bible Gateway and I typed in fools under the search engine, and it had so many I was overwhelmed. So I just backed out of it and said, okay, never mind. Let's just say that, yeah, we know that. Verse 15 says, intelligent people are always ready to learn. Their ears are open for knowledge. So you can pull a contrast there between fools that have no interest in understanding, but they don't hesitate to spout off their knowledge, but it's not backed up by anything. It's just how they feel, what they think, and people do that all the time. And so I like that comparison. Intelligent people are ready, always ready to learn. Their ears are open for knowledge. It doesn't matter how smart you are. You can be the highest academia level, a PhD. Sometimes I think when you get that high up, you assume that because you're the most educated, that you would be more inclined to know the right answer to things. But a truly intelligent person, even if they were a PhD, would know that there's always more room for better understanding, and they can always gain more knowledge. And sometimes a PhD can actually learn from lesser people, right? In fact, I think sometimes, not necessarily with education level, but definitely with status, I think sometimes with wealth and prosperity, if it goes on too long, you become very detached from the ways of the average person and the struggles that they have and how it feels to have to get up and go to work all the time, even when you're sick, and how it feels to have to, you know, stress out because your kid needs childcare and you have to go to work and you don't know what to do. They're separated from those common issues. And so they lose sight of where other people are coming from. So in that way, intelligent or wealthy, prosperous people would do well to listen to the people in the stations below them. That's what politicians should do, really. Okay, verse 13 and 17, I saw a similarity there, kind of around the same area of what we just talked about. Spouting off before listening to the facts is both shameful and foolish. I am telling you, this scripture, this, when I homeschooled my boys for a couple years, it was a social experiment that I wouldn't do it again, but I'm glad I did it. But spouting off before listening to the facts is both shameful and foolish. One of the things that I always wanted to make sure I taught my boys was how to think through things, how to think critically, right? Critical thinking skills is important to me. And they shouldn't just listen to other people's opinions, because we know that fools have no interest in understanding. They only want to air their own opinions. So they don't have all the facts, or they don't care to share all the facts, or they don't even care if they know all the facts. And I want my boys to recognize a fool's folly and not fall for it, and be able to get to the real meaning of things, right? And a good example of that, one day when while we were homeschooling, there was a news article about a boy, a teenage boy, I'll call him a young man. He had Down syndrome, and he was in a movie theater, and he was watching a violent movie. He was there by himself. I think someone, his caretaker or whoever, had dropped him off. He was at the movie theater by himself, and he was watching a violent movie, and he wanted to go back in and watch it again. And the security guards at the movie theater, he was causing a disruption because he wanted back in, and someone told him he had to pay for it or he couldn't go back into that theater again. And so he caused a disruption, and the security guards overreacted and pushed him down and kind of held him down. And I guess that he suffered serious injuries because he couldn't breathe. I'm embarrassed to say I can't remember if he died. He may have died. But the whole point is, So everybody, and this was actually an article on Facebook, and everybody in the comments was going nuts over these security guards. How could they do that? How could they do that to this boy, this young boy, and he's just a kid and blah, blah, blah. And so I read that to my boys. I read the story and I read some of the comments and I said, what do you think about that? And they said, oh, yes, that's horrible. And I said, well, really think about it, though. He's a 17-year-old. He's like 6 foot two, 100, 200 pounds. So he doesn't come across as a kid. He comes across as someone who could be dangerous. He has Down syndrome, but they didn't know, the security guards didn't know that Down syndromes had trouble with their, I guess they have breathing troubles that they can't, because they were holding him down, for some reason he was not able to breathe. And I'm not going to pretend to understand why, but that's apparently a common thing with Down syndrome. But they wouldn't have known that because they don't have training in how to tackle a Down syndrome person. I mean, who does, right? So they just thought that he, and also remember that he was being rebellious and loud and disruptive. He was scaring the other people in the theater, and he was trying to do something that he shouldn't have been able to do because he didn't pay for that movie and he wanted to see a violent movie. So this was all, these all play into the situation. But to top it off, I think during that time there had been shootings in movie theaters. So probably the security guards were a little sensitive to disruptions in the theater, right? And they probably had just been through training of how to deal with difficult people in there and how to they're concerned about the other customers feeling unsafe. So I can kind of understand that. So I just wanted to point that out to the boys that, not everything is what it seems like at the surface. You got to put yourself in the position of the people that did the supposedly horrible thing and think of where they're coming from and maybe what was going on at that time that led to that problem. Yes, it's unfortunate that that young man died, but I wanted my boys to understand that you don't just get into a rally and start spouting off things, because if you don't have all the facts. And that leads me to the second scripture that was related to that. Verse 13, I'll say it again, was spouting off before listening to the facts is both shameful and foolish. We need to teach our kids to be critical thinkers and figure things out for themselves and don't believe everything they hear. So vitally important for us too. And then verse 17 I felt was related to that. The first to speak in court sounds right until the cross-examination begins. So yeah, don't just jump on the bandwagon right off the bat and decide and make your decision. Hear every angle, right? So I like that. Okay, verses 10 through 12, they all seem to be related to wealth and arrogance. And so I'll just read 10. The name of the Lord is a strong fortress. The godly run to him and are safe. So the name of the Lord is a strong fortress. That just means we should have our full reliance of protection and safety, and everything we count on should be wrapped up in God, not the things that we've built up in our wealth. Which leads me to verse 11. The rich think their wealth as a strong defense. They imagine it to be a high wall of safety. Well, that's literal too, because wealthy people can buy, a room full of gold bars so that they think they can survive an economic collapse. Rich people can have big steel pointy gates around their neighborhood, and they think that will keep the bad people out. They're relying on their wealth. They're relying on the fortress that they've built. People in the eye of a storm, people in Florida, some of them decided to stay because they had fortified buildings and their buildings were made of concrete, and they started talking about, well, I have this and that and this and that, so I'll be fine. But the Lord gives and the Lord takes away. And if danger is coming, you should get out of there. regardless of, like, putting your all your faith in your fortified walls, something else could go wrong that you're not even thinking of. So I think we, as God's people, we need to just really listen to that inner voice that tells us if we need to go or if we need to stay. That's sort of off topic, but obviously the rich think their wealth as a strong defense. And then verse 12, haughtiness goes before destruction. Humility precedes honor. Again, this is a key that's talked about over and over again throughout the Bible, not just Proverbs, that haughtiness means arrogance, and it goes before destruction. So yeah, we get too full of ourselves and think that we accumulated all of this through our hard work and making good choices. And that's true. Those things are all good. And that's part of growing in wisdom. But don't be careful not to take the credit for yourself, because even though you did good things to get there, God allowed you to get there. I mean, let's be real. He can give and he can take away. He's allowed for you to have good health. He's allowed you to be successful in your whatever venture that you go into or whatever business that you go into. He's allowed you to be born into a position where you could get an education or what have you. He's allowed you to have the circumstances that, combined with your hard work and making good choices, created a successful position. So we just have to kind of give credit where credit's due sometimes. Okay, what else? Is that it? Oh, one more thing. One verse that I liked, of course, was verse 22. The man who finds a wife finds a treasure, and he receives favor from the Lord. He may not always think that when she's nagging at him, but a good woman who tries to be a good steward of the family's resources and it will go shopping and bring home something for, she finds a good deal on something that she knows someone in her family has needed or wanted for a long time. And so she's always thinking about how to best help the people in her family, help support them. That was God's original plan. Eve was to be a helper for Adam. And I know that now we almost every family has two working parents. And I understand that financially that seems necessary sometimes. But God's plan for women to stay home and be helpers, or not even necessarily stay home, but to be helpers, to have that attitude of a helper. It really does. I know it seems counterproductive sometimes when to have someone stay home, but when you have someone who's willing to make that sacrifice and give up their own professional career or growth, I know I did that. And it was hard sometimes because I felt so vulnerable. I felt like, you know, here my husband's getting promoted and he's thriving in his professional career. And I'm just like, he's getting more and more and I'm getting less and less. And I just had to check my ego at the door and realize that, you know what, it's not about me. And I am a very important component to his success. And luckily, my husband fully realizes that. And I've actually wanted to go back to work a few times and he would talk me out of it because he knew how much it helped our family to have someone at home taking care of all the details. And the fact that he didn't have to leave work all the time to take care of family issues or pick up the sick kids from school or whatever, that allowed him to be fully present in his job and do the very best job that he could. So if you have a good guy, a good husband who has that mentality that wants to do well, wants to be a good provider, is willing to work hard, and then you have a woman, the wife, who's willing to be a good steward of the resources and trustworthy and someone who is a godly woman, I think that's the ideal scenario. It rarely ever happens, I know. And even staying home sometimes is not always healthy. Sometimes I've struggled with that, like I said, but anyways, I don't know what's in store for us. I'm kind of almost on the cusp of being able to go do something for myself, for the like a job, actual job. And I don't know how that's going to go, but my son, my oldest son's about to start driving, and I feel like this could start a new chapter for me. So that's exciting. But of course, I'll always keep up on this. I will see this through to the end. It is the most important thing I do, aside from caring for my family. Maybe even more so. But anyways, that's it for today. I hope you all have a great day. I will talk to you soon.